Do you know what you want for Christmas?
A cute toy.
No, I just want my family back.
That's what I want for Christmas.
We'll see what Santa can do, okay?
It's Christmas, so be of good cheer.
Merry Christmas.
Tis the season to watch telly on Channel 4. Stream now.
Today you'll learn high function in depression and anxiety, hide in plain sight, and the tool to feel better without nuking your life. We're going to cover the nervous system resets through the traps, sleep, caffeine, social media fixes, and how to help yourself the right way. So stay tuned to the end for five things that you can start this week. Now, if this helps you today, I want you to follow The Advisor with Stacey Chalemi on Apple or Spotify and subscribe to YouTube at Stacey Chalemi Advisor. It helps more people get real tools. Now, today I'm really excited because we have a very special guest today. We have Dr. Sam Zan, and he is a psychiatrist helping high performers get well without losing their edge. Dr. Zan, it is a pleasure to have you on our show today. I'm really excited to have you here. Tell everybody a little about yourself and what you do.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Stacey. I'm a psychiatrist, but I always like to start with I'm a little anti-psychiatry. I think the industry at large, we've overdiagnosed, we've overprescribed. And so my mission is really to help people understand their mental health, their emotional health, and how we can holistically combine different factors to be our best selves. So I'm excited to have this conversation with you today.
I'm very excited to have it too. I think it's well needed in our society. Now, in plain English, what is high function in depression and anxiety, and how is it different than from what people picture it to be?
Yeah, someone who's high functioning but still suffers from depression and anxiety, you know, it's the human experience. We all have depression and anxiety. The high functioning part is we hide it. We do well in work. We mask things in our relationships. And the more we repress what we're feeling, the more it starts to bubble up and can explode like a volcano. So those who are high functioning tend to repress what they're going through versus if someone really is just in the throes of depression and anxiety, they're probably being seen, they're probably being treated, they probably have already talked to somebody about it.
Yeah. Now, what are the most missed signs that one, you know, ambitious person shrugs off?
I think it's just the emotional reactivity. We may not identify ourselves as feeling depressed or anxious, and we don't need to. I'm not for labeling these things, but what we do notice is that we're irritable, we're angry, we have low energy, our relationships don't feel connected or meaningful, we wake up without any enthusiasm or motivation, and we just think that's life, you know, tough job, family stressors, and that's just life. And that doesn't have to be life. Our goal is for everyone, regardless of their external circumstances, to feel inspiration, to feel motivation, to feel love, to feel connected.
100%. So do smart, successful people wait so long to get help?
Often they do, or they never get help at all. And they just start to develop these defense mechanisms and patterns in which they're trying to create a life that caters to their weaknesses rather than a life that caters to their strengths.
Can you give us an example?
Sure. If I'm feeling anxious, but I don't want to talk about it or tell anybody, I'm often smiling in public. I am trying to force myself and white knuckle through difficult experiences. Maybe I'm drinking a lot of alcohol in social dynamics to numb some of the nerves. And therefore, I'm not anxious. I've found ways to cope. Alcohol, right, putting on a happy face, isolating maybe when the pressure feels too much.
Right. Now, if someone is listening that thinks this might be me, what's the first 24-hour step?
I think the first thing is just to realize there's nothing wrong with you, that you're beautiful just the way you are, that the things you feel, other humans feel also, and it's not anything that's strange, bizarre, or, you know, pathological. I think that's why people don't want to go to see a psychiatrist or a therapist, because they don't want to admit that there's something wrong with me. And that's not what we preach. We preach, let's find what's right with you and get rid of the clutter, get rid of what's getting in the way. And so in the first 24 hours of reaching out to a therapist or a mental health professional, I would feel confident, excited, optimistic, proud of myself that I'm taking this step as a strength, not a weakness.
Right. Oh, definitely. Now, when symptoms spike, what's your 2-minute nervous system reset anyone could do and anywhere?
Yeah, such an important question because in my field, we jump to what's the right medication for somebody, and that's not what we should be doing first. We should be practicing some breath work. We should take a moment and ground. I think that when we're going through something, be it depression, anxiety, anger, insomnia, we think it's all in our mind, right? We can think our way out of this. We can fix it. We can solve the problem proactively. Instead, what we have to realize is that it's also in our body, and we need to feel what we're feeling in order to move through it and let that energy pass. If we bottle it up and just approach it cognitively and try to think our way out of it, the body tends to get more tense and feel more pressure. So the nervous system release that I really like is long, exaggerated exhalations. It's really hard to tell somebody, take a deep breath. If you're having a panic attack, oh, just take a deep breath, right? It's almost insulting. But if you say, take a long exhalation, you might make them pause and think, and it's actually much more applicable and doable. When you're feeling tense, your diaphragm has a hard time expanding and getting a big breath in. So to say, take a deep breath, they can't, even if they'd really, really try. But if they take the biggest breath they can in, hold it, and then slowly breathe out, anybody can do that, even in the throes of panic. So I always focus on that exaggerated exhalation.
I like that. That's a really great idea. Now, sleep, caffeine, alcohol, and scrolling, like, what's the minimum effective change that moves the needle?
I think it's the compass and direction, not the actual day-to-day. So if we're headed in the right direction, then everything else is okay because we could take a step back, but we're still moving forward. But if we're pointed in the wrong direction entirely, that's where it becomes problematic. If my caffeine intake has become excessive, I shouldn't stop. That could be dangerous. It can be lead to, a lot of irritability and headache and fatigue. But instead, we should taper down slowly. And similarly, if we're in doom scrolling or anything, even in the recovery world, I think there has been a disservice in the fact that addicts are called addicts and that you have to be practicing sobriety as a singular solution. We're much more about balance and integration. Drugs have always been a part of human civilization since the dawn of man. And so it's silly to say, let's just take it out of our systems forever for everybody. Caffeine, tobacco, nicotine, alcohol, these things, they don't have to be taken or consumed, but it's almost possible to live a life without any kind of substances. And so I think the better education is how do we integrate? How do we use these substances intentionally? How do we go on social media intentionally rather than passively? That's when we start to develop unhealthy brain patterns.
Now, how do you explain like CBT and ACT, mindfulness, and when meds actually make sense?
In our work as psychiatrists, people usually come to us because they're going through something. Sometimes, and I love when they do, they come to us preventatively. They come to us because they want to grow and they want to improve their strengths. But usually it's because they're suffering with something. And so in our work, it makes sense to consider medication, especially for someone who's having panic attacks or insomnia or suicidality and the extremes of these behaviors and feelings, because we have to start by treating the acute symptoms. That's why they're coming to us. And so, not to say that there's nothing else we can do, but if somebody's going through panic or they can't sleep, I can't do therapy with them, right? I can't counsel them on breath work and relationship counseling when they can't sleep at night. So we have to start with a sleep med, but temporarily. I think the problem is that we've made this now a wheelchair rather than a caster or a crutch. People think that I have to be taking this antidepressant for the rest of my life, or this Xanax or Ambien. It works for me, and great, it works for me. I'll keep taking it. Well, no, there's a cost, and we have to avoid dependence. We have to avoid long-term health risks. So I think medication does have a role in acute care. And then, like a cast, if you break your bone, you have a fracture, you go to a doctor, you get an x-ray, you get support. Because although the bone can heal itself, you can't put your arm on a table for a month, right? Life gets in the way. So we need more structure. And that's what we do provide. And I think it is good to have medicine for temporary structure so that we can heal the emotional fracture, take the cast off, and rebuild even stronger.
I love that. Now, for the person scared, they'll lose their edge or they'll slow down. What do you say to them?
Yeah, this is a demographic I see a lot of. I work with professional athletes, and there's this almost machismo of I can't open up vulnerably or tap into my emotions, or if I think about the thing that bothers me, then it's going to ruin my ability to perform. And in
Yeah.
fact, I think it's the opposite. I think that if you feel you're losing your edge, then let's maintain the edge. Let's
Yeah.
understand that the thing that happened to you when you were five has driven you to your success today by whatever metrics you define that. Let's not lose it. Let's understand, though, how it's also hurting us. Let's
Exactly.
bring more self-awareness so that we can find balance and that these traits aren't ruling us subconsciously. We haven't developed defense mechanisms that we can't undo. And so I
Right.
think maintaining our edge is so important. Adding to that edge with balance and nervous system regulation and subconscious reprogramming. This is the work we're up to. We're not trying to change people. We're trying to add to their strengths and help ameliorate some of their weaknesses.
I love that. Now, how do you talk to like a boss or a co-founder without oversharing but still getting the support?
So if you're in a work setting, this is very interesting for us being in a mental health business. We have about 80 people in the company and it's almost like we need our own reality TV show because we all have our own things that we're going through while we're helping other people go through what they're going through. And so sometimes those boundaries can be tricky. We want to be there for each other. We want to be supportive. We have outlets within our company for this, being very mindful that
Yeah.
it's hard to talk to your boss about what you're going through because there's this risk that even if your boss is caring and compassionate, maybe subconsciously they're like, ooh, they're going through a lot and they're judging their performance or their ability to work. So we've separated that. Anybody who needs the support can see whether it's a coach or a therapist that's not tied to leadership, that's not, connected to management. And then of course we have HR and different things like that. So in your if so if you're working in a work setting and you want to be vulnerable with your coworkers and your boss. I think the first thing is ask for permission.
Yeah.
It may not be the right time during company hours. Maybe it is. Maybe it's okay. Your boss says that's what I'm here for. Maybe it's a conversation to be had later. Maybe they're going through something and they're just not ready to help support you in this moment, even though they want to. And so
Yeah.
asking for permission first is so important. And then there's a question of how much we want to share. Right. And that just really comes down to safety and trust. And if there is a fully trusting relationship, I think it's okay to say, look, I'm not my best self right now. And I'm reaching out because I want to be my best self. I want to be there for the company.
Yeah.
Very different than just trauma dumping in the middle of a workday.
Yeah. Now, relationships. When it comes to relationships, what does a supportive partner script like versus a fixing lecturing one?
Yeah, I think we've all started to learn that when our partners come to us with a problem, most of us, our human tendency is to fix it, to help them, to solve the problem. When really our intimate partners, our relationships, our friends, our family, the best thing we can do for each other is co-regulate. Co-regulate means I am going to relax my nervous system in your presence. So that you can relax your nervous system, so that you can feel safe, so that you can lower your guard. Because if I just jump to, well, let's fix that problem, right? Maybe the child coming to their parents saying, I'm being bullied. The parent says, all right, well, let me go talk to the bully's parents, right? You're not actually helping the emotional awareness of that child. You're not helping the responsibility and maturity of that child to understand how to interact with these things. You're just trying to solve the problem. You're trying to be a good parent. But really, we're actually not getting to the root cause. And so I think these approaches of let me fix what you're going through needs to be replaced by let me just listen, let me be here for you so that when you feel more relaxed, maybe then we can be proactive about it together.
Yeah, I love that. Now, when it comes to burnout and versus depression and anxiety, how can we help people, and tell the difference?
Yeah, burnout has a very direct cause and effect. When someone comes to me and says, I'm dealing with anxiety, but I can't pay my rent next month, I tell them that's not anxiety, that's life stress, right? I would be anxious too. Anybody would be anxious if the external circumstances were putting a lot of pressure on us. Burnout, similarly, if you're working 15 hours a day and only sleeping five, well, you will burn out. That doesn't mean you're depressed. That doesn't mean you're anxious. That means you need more rest. And so I love the definition of depression is just sometimes it's a state of deep rest. We need our body to relax, to recover, to heal. And what ends up happening is burnout can lead to depression. Burnout can lead to anxiety. But it's its own battle in itself, separate from the outcome. The upstream factors are really what we focus on in mental health care, where I
Yeah.
think most of the industry is focused on the downstream symptoms that we try to mask and band-aid. So if someone was dealing with burnout, I would ask about their sleep and their hours, and more so, I would ask why. Why do we have to work so hard? What are we doing? Is there a goal? Is it short term? Are we just saying, I'm going to really work hard for these next 6 months so that I can take time off? Or are we trying to make as much money as possible? Are we trying to cover a void, an insecurity, a belief in self that we're not good enough and that we have to keep working harder and harder and harder? That to me is the differentiation of, is this something that we want to continue and build structure for, or we really have to go upstream and try to better understand ourselves and change our psychology.
Yes. Oh, that's a great answer. Now, daily structure, like what does a protective routine look like, for high performers?
My favorite routine is both a morning and a nighttime routine. I think that high performers, all of us humans, we get up. What's the first thing we do when we open our eyes? Usually we reach to our right or left, we grab our phone, right? And it is probably the most destructive habit that we've created as humans because all of a sudden you're just giving the world access to your own sovereignty, to your own peace, to your own thought processes in a most pivotal time of the day before we go to sleep and when we wake up. And there's two reasons for that. When we wake up, we're priming our day. Whatever we do in the morning, my favorite morning routine is a cold shower. Not because only it has health benefits, but it has psychological benefits. It's not fun to hop in a cold shower, right? And we know that there's good blood perfusion and nervous system regulation, but psychologically, I'm also telling myself, I am choosing to start my day with something that's uncomfortable. And the rest of the day becomes easier because of that. My pain threshold goes up, my tolerance goes up because I'm exposing myself to that. So similarly, a morning routine is so important. Doing a little breath work, a little meditation, a little intention setting, a list of what do I want to focus on today so that the world doesn't passively choose my focus. I actively choose my focus. Before we go to bed is also so important and something that most people don't know about. There was a study where they had a bunch of athletes and they told them, stop working out for a few weeks and instead just think about working out before you go to bed. And they actually found a correlation where they were stronger and they had more endurance. And the hypothesis is that the brain keeps moving while we're asleep, right? Our conscious mind turns off, but our subconscious mind keeps going. So if we prime and program our subconscious mind to think about exercise, well, our brain's connected to our nervous system, our nervous system's connected to our muscles, and we're actually getting some kind of extension of that priming when we're asleep. Imagine if you watch a scary movie before you go to bed, you have a nightmare. Now imagine if you think about your next day and all the ways you want to be kind and compassionate to others and all the things that you want to practice the next day, where your brain has already rehearsed it, so the next day becomes easier. Morning routines and nighttime routines are one of the most powerful, I think, activities for a high performer, let alone all of us.
Oh, wow. That's a great answer. That's pretty interesting too, that if you thought about it subconsciously and then the other ones were working out, that they were just as strong and they performed really well.
Right.
That's really interesting, I find.
Subconscious mind is so powerful. And I think we don't talk about it enough. We don't talk about the unconscious mind. We're very stuck in the conscious mind. And that's where this work becomes much deeper.
Well, 90% of our memory is stored in our subconscious. It's only 10%, and that's pretty much our logical, area, realistic area. But everything that we have is really in our subconscious, and sometimes we don't even realize a lot of the trauma, a lot of the things that affect us in our present tense is caused by things that were stored in our subconscious.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is the work we actually get into with psychedelic therapy, with psychodynamic therapy. We're helping people get out of their conscious mind and understand their intuition, their stored patterns, where they came from, why they turned out to be that way, and then helping them rewire those subconscious patterns.
Now, can you tell us a little more about psychedelics? I know that we have an audience that's very interested in it and would love to learn a little bit more about it.
Absolutely. And where I come from is a place of medicine. I'm a doctor. I practice legally. The medicine we use is ketamine. Ketamine is a dissociative anesthetic at very high doses, but at low doses, it's used for mental health. It causes a mind-altering experience. It causes us to almost at a low dose feel more meditative, more observant of what we're going through, feeling, and thinking. At higher doses, it can become a little psychedelic. We start to see and feel things that maybe aren't there. I had a lawyer once tell me in her ketamine journey afterwards that she felt like she was swimming in the ocean and she saw these big, beautiful whales she was swimming with. This is a high dose experience for mental health. It doesn't have to be. We can do low dose meditative as well. But for her, this subconscious projection of swimming in the ocean with whales reminded her of why she went into law. When she was young, she wanted to be an environmentalist and protect the whales. Being in corporate law for the past 10 plus years, she lost sight of that. And it was this projection that gave her so much peace and love and reminded her that she doesn't hate her work. She's just unhappy with her purpose right now, that she can reapply her work. And that's her subconscious talking to her, showing her things that weren't present in her conscious mind, which was so cluttered with daily to-do tasks and pressures and milestones and goals that didn't align with her true inner child, her true self, what she wanted in her heart. Those are the kind of experiences that shed light on why diving into the psychedelic experience can add more to the therapeutic journey.
I think a lot of people are interested in it, but they just don't understand it. They don't understand, exactly, what ketamine is, and is there you ha do you have to prepare? Is there a cleansing before the actual when you go through the process?
Let's talk about it. So, if someone is dealing with depression or anxiety or PTSD, or they don't subscribe to labels and DSM diagnoses, but they're just emotionally conflicted, well, first you have to meet with a doctor to do a medical screening. There are many reasons why we shouldn't do this work. If we don't have good cardiovascular health, if we have uncontrolled seizures, if we're pregnant, breastfeeding, or planning, if we have manic or psychotic undertones where our psychological health right now maybe isn't in the most stable place, many reasons why we shouldn't do a treatment like ketamine therapy. But if we go through the medical and psychiatric screening and see that they're a good candidate, our service, we just meet virtually, just like this over a computer. And we also have offices if people prefer that to come in. We want to then understand what are some of the goals? What are we looking for? And with the medicine, it comes in different forms. You can either get an infusion or injection in the office, or at home, you can have a lozenge that you put under your tongue. You take sublingually for about 15, 20 minutes. It's a very interesting process because we do need to prime ourselves. You talked about detox. Is that necessary? And yeah, I mean, we don't want other substances conflicting. We want to try to eat healthy, anti-inflammatory diet, maybe even fast before a treatment. But the most important thing is to relax the nervous system going into it. So we have virtual coaches on our team that will connect with people when they're ready to do the treatment. We make sure that you have someone at home who's monitoring you and there for you as well, and they're trained and understand what their role is in your care. And we provide that full wraparound care. So that when you've done your breath work, maybe you've done some journaling and some intention setting, where do I want my mind to be if I could narrate and author the thoughts in my mind? Then you take the medicine with eye mask and headphones and you really go inward with meditative music, turning off the external senses and just being with yourself for about 30, 40 minutes, maybe an hour, you might feel a little mind-altering sensation. Most people describe it as meditative and euphoric. Some people say that they've had a little bit of scary experiences. And so we coach them through that and help them with relaxation techniques. And then afterwards, we unpack it. What did we go through? What did we feel? And how do we want to apply that to our daily thoughts, feelings, and behaviors?
And is this something that you do on a regular basis, the ketamine?
So the indication, there's actually a drug called Spravato. It's a ketamine nasal spray, and that's FDA approved for treatment-resistant depression, meaning I've been depressed, I've tried medicines, I've tried therapy, and I'm not getting better. For them, their clinical indication is twice a week for the first month, once a week for the second month, and then once every 1 or 2 weeks after that. Now, drug company, of course, they're going to say take it forever. We don't. As doctors, we say take it for 1, 2, 3 months, see how you're feeling. And if we've made the impactful change, then we don't need to continue the medicine, but maybe for maintenance every month, maybe things come up and we feel like we need to get back on weekly. And so it becomes a front-loaded strategy to lubricate the mind this concept of neuroplasticity. It means we're creating new neurons and new neural pathways. And that's what these medicines primarily do. So that when the mind is malleable, the clay of the brain is warm, we can mold it a little bit easier. And through therapeutic application, hopefully we don't need to continue this after 2, 3 months. Some people realize that they're better with it than without it long term, and it's a case by case basis.
Oh, that's very interesting. So it really could help you really see things and understand things that you didn't before and understand how to cope with things. So it's teaching you a different way of coping with things through realizations of things that you didn't really even know that were playing an impact in your life prior.
Yeah, I always say, do you ever have a friend who comes to you with something they're going through and they're full of emotion? And for you, it's clear as day what they should do or why they're feeling what they're feeling. But for the friend, they're so clouded by their emotions that they don't see it as logically. This allows us the opportunity to reset the clutter. Many people say it's like we have 100 browsers open on our computer and we can hit Control Alt Delete and just start with one browser again. And when you do that, you start to have self-insights. No one knows you better than you know yourself. And so, as a therapist, it's such a great tool for me to ask you what you experience and what you're feeling when your mind has less clutter, because then you're the sharpest therapist in that setting, right? We want our patients to be their own therapist long term, give them enough tools in the beginning to help them with that.
Oh, I love this. This is amazing. You, Dr. Zan, listeners are promised 5 concrete actions. What would you share with them, what they can do this week to help reduce their high function in depression or anxiety?
There's a philosophy, an ancient belief of the Egyptians. In the Egyptian Book of the Dead, they say in the afterlife, you will weigh your heart on a scale against a feather. And if your heart weighs more than the feather, then you go to their version of hell. And if it weighs less than the feather, then you go to their version of heaven. I think a real tangible thing is to look at that from a metaphorical aspect, but then make it actionable. What is weighing heavy on my heart? Is it that relationship with my family member we haven't talked in years? Is it the fact that the holidays are coming up and I might see somebody that I'm not on best terms with? Is it maybe I just did something that was inappropriate, mean, and I never really made amends? Those are the things that I think weigh on us the most. And when we can really sit with ourselves and clean that up in the recovery world, they call this making amends. All of a sudden, our heart's lighter. And when the heart's lighter than a feather, anxiety dissipates, depression dissipates, we feel more at peace. So I would say sit down, make a list of what's weighing on your heart, and then try to make an action plan to either find peace, reach out to somebody, or process further with a professional.
I love that advice. That's wonderful. Now, tell us a little about the services that you provide.
So at Anywhere Clinic, we're a national telepsychiatry program. We do have offices in our local regions as well. We're in over 30 states. What we connect people with is mental health care. And wherever you are, whatever you're going through, if you've been in psychiatry before and maybe someone let you down, I hear horror stories. My last psychiatrist didn't even look me in my eyes, or he spent 3 to 4 or 5 minutes with me and then gave me a list of medicines I should take. If this has happened to you, then know that we lead with compassion. We take the time because we can scale at the comfort of your own home through your phone or your computer. And if you're not sure that you're ready, we have free educational consults with our coaches. You can hop on our website, anywhereclinic.com, either schedule with a psychiatric provider or a therapist, or just a coach to learn more about your options. I think that sometimes it's scary to get ready for this kind of conversation. We feel a lot of internal judgment. We feel fear that we're going to approach topics that'll cause us emotion, and we don't want to feel those emotions. And so, just knowing that you're in a safe, confidential place with someone who's there to care for you. My favorite thing that people tell me is, I'll be with you till the end. It's like I feel so safe in these conversations that I always want to be able to have these, whether that's weekly or monthly or yearly. I love when someone says, I've never told anybody this before, because now we're making progress. And so, those are the kind of things that you brace yourself for. And that's the way we meet people. And whether medication's appropriate and helpful, we can talk about it. If someone doesn't want to take medications, we can talk about different lifestyle changes and behavioral modifications, supplements, tons of non-pharmacological approaches as well. It's really just trying to find all the best ways holistically to be there for you.
I love that. That's amazing. And now, is there anything else that you'd like to tap on before we end our conversation?
Yeah, I think that what we have to understand in psychiatry, even if you look at the etymology, psyche meaning the soul, iatry meaning the healing of, we're really after healing the soul. And I think we
Yes.
lost that as a society. Understand that we really want science. We want evidence-based research. And I get it. I acknowledge that, and I want that too. But in mental health, we have very limited science. We were known as quacks because we were just kind of like the wizards who were saying, hey, add a little bit of this, add a little bit of that. I think that's ancient psychiatry. That's 50 years ago. Now we have some of the sharpest minds in this field. And their role isn't to just apply science to your life. Their role is to apply the art of the unknown and mix it with the science to look at the body and the biology and incorporate the psychology and our self-esteem and our self-image and our belief systems. And then look at our relationships, our environment, our daily habits and routines, our work and our purpose. And then, if those who are ready and willing, look at the spiritual sides of life, death and mortality. This is something we all deal with. Nobody is exempt from that. Purpose, community, nature, all of these things that often go overlooked in a society of hustle and bustle, grind mentality. So I think many times people are shocked when we start to talk about our spiritual health. And it's because maybe they've had religious experiences that were either traumatic or at the very minimum didn't feel aligned, didn't feel like it made sense for them. And we're not here to preach any doctrine or religion, but to help people understand their own spiritual exploration. Whether that's, I believe that when life ends, and that's it. Well, that's a belief system, or I believe that there's something else, and I don't really know how to explain it. A sense of energy and connectivity and a collective consciousness that we return to. Well, that's a belief system too. And whatever our belief system is just fine. As long as we live our life in accordance with that, our heart is lighter than a feather, and our mind, body, and spirit are one.
I love that. That's so true. That's so true. Well, Dr. Zen, this has been a wonderful experience. I thank you so much for coming on this show and sharing your tools and strategies and just filling us up with your knowledge when it comes to anxiety and depression. I think there's so many people we all go through like anxiety and depression in our lives, but so many people suffer from it and on a day-to-day basis. And they really do need guidance and help from another individual. They need the support. And I'm so glad someone like is out there that can actually help them and not just from a regular standpoint but from a holistic standpoint as well. And you incorporate both psychiatry with a holistic more approach, and you're able to help people not always resort right to the medication but be able to find other ways to help them resolve their anxiety and depression in a more healthier way where they could go and move forward in life and not have to depend on a medication to get them through the day.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe we all have our own internal pharmacy and we don't need to rely on the external pharmacy, but it can be helpful in times of difficulty. The goal, though, is to find harmony and balance within so that we're operating, our body is such a miraculous machine that it can heal itself. Sometimes we just have to get out of our own way and feel vulnerable enough to have a professional help us. So I invite everybody, if you're dealing with something internally or you have a loved one who's dealing with something, child and family issues, all of it, we're here for you. Anywhereclinic.com. We do individual work, group work, family work, relationship work. I think we all just deserve a compassionate professional to help us on this journey.
100%, 100%. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Zan. This has been wonderful. I appreciate you and I appreciate everything that you do. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for your advocacy, and it was a lovely conversation.
Same here. You have a great day.